This is the Miami Heat Index Heatcast with Mosi Platt. Joining me today is the Queen of Heat News, also known as Sianna Winfield. She tweets the best links to news stories regarding the Miami Heat and really the NBA. If you're on Twitter, she's a must follow. And so I thought, since she's on top of all of the news, we could do a season preview with the top five news stories facing the Heat as they go into the 2012 NBA season. And she agreed to do it. So here we are. How are you doing, Ms. Winfield?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Good.
I'm ready for Christmas?
I am ready for Christmas. I'm all finished.
Okay. Well, let's start tackling these five questions, or these top five news stories facing the Heat. The number five from you was contract extension for Coach Spo. What can the Heat expect from Spo a year later, and how will his off-season coaches visit the system? So my first question I asked you about this was, I've read a little bit about his off-season coaches visits, but not that much. Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, apparently, per Ethan Slomick, I don't know if I'm saying his name right. He had a Skolnick.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that, Ethan. he had a blog in reference to Coach Spo's off-season coaches visits, which range from Chip Kelly, Urban Meyer, John Calipari, Billy Donovan, you know, also Tom Crean, Wade's ex-college coach. And, you know, I guess from what I was reading, it was kind of like a inquisitive Q&A session, you know, how do you motivate, you know, your players? Because, you know, most of these coaches are pretty much well-rounded, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, and I thought that was interesting because, you know, you got these three stars, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's kind of like, okay, how can I get the best out of them? You know, how can I get the best out of this talent? You know what I mean? And you're talking to coaches that have, you know, pretty much had top-notch college talent, you know, pro talent, you know, what have you, okay? So, to me, I was, you know, I found that interesting because, you know, you got the great Pat Riley, right?
Right.
I don't think you need to look any further, but, you know, it is, I think it's very good for him to reach outside of that circle, okay? To get other feedback, you know, other tactics, other coaching, you know, do's and don'ts, you know what I'm saying, if they can put this team over the top.
I agree with that because I think, obviously, you know, Spo came up in Heat organization, so I would think it's fair to say he knows everything Riley has to offer in terms of coaching and all the things you talked about with getting stars to play together. I'm sure he's heard all of that before.
Exactly.
And with all of that, you know, the team still came up short last season, so I think you got to go outside the box to try to figure out what can be done differently. So I think that's a good point. Which one of those coaches do you think could provide the most value? Which one of those visits? Because when you said it, the first one that jumped out to me was Calipari, because he has to take top-notch talent every season and turn it around in a short period of time into a winning team. Because, you know, all he deals with is one-and-done players.
Exactly.
So I think that would be interesting for Spo this season coming into a shortened season. So I was curious, which one do you think would provide the most value?
For me, the one that I didn't mention was Tony Dungy. Okay.
Okay.
I think Tony Dungy, to me, would be the most value add. Okay. Because, I mean, to me, it's like, from what I know about Dungy, he coaches from, like, a pure heart. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, and so, you know, I just think that, you know, his I guess, if you want to call it a legacy, you know what I mean, for the time that he was in the NFL, you know, those kind of things. I really do think that, to me, he would glean a lot from him, okay? But like you said, with Calipari, you know, always turning around that coaching talent because, I mean, the college talent because they're in and they're out. You know what I'm saying? And then you got to come back, you know, with a new group. So for me, those top two would be very good for him.
Okay. I'd like to point out about Dungy. I think the Dungy thing is important for the Heat because if there's any team that's, let's say, what's the right phrase? I'll use the phrase player friendly.
Say what?
It would be the Heat. If there's one team in the NBA that's the most player friendly, it would be the Heat with, you know, Dwayne Wade, the shadow GM. You know, for bringing LeBron and Bosh to Miami.
Yeah.
And so if there's any one team that should have a partnership with the players, it should be Miami. And that's kind of what I take from Dungy when he talks about his coaching model. You know, he never cursed at his players. He didn't, you know, excessively yell at his players. You know, he would explain to them what he expects from them so they know what they have to do. And if they do it, they have no problems. So that would be, mode for a sport to follow.
Yeah. You know, and like I said, it's just how do you get your team to run through a brick wall for you? You know what I'm saying? How do you do that? How do you take this talent, and not only that, you got your role players that are looking at your stars, and then you as the coach, you know what I'm saying? How do you motivate your team to just go all out for you? You know what I mean?
Right.
Buy in to what you're saying, selling, you know what I mean? What you're putting out there. And do it.
Right. And I think that the contract extension helps because it shows that Riley has faith in him. You know, that says something to the players. But I also think you're right. Because you're going to need the players to run through some brick walls in this shortened season when they play 4 games in 5 nights. And you've got to rely on the role players more to contribute.
Exactly.
So I think you're right. Okay, let's go on to your fourth biggest story facing the Heat was, is Curry the answer at the center spot? All right, so as you stated, all the stories say the conditioning seems to be a problem for Eddie Curry. So what should the Heat's next move be if Curry plans out? So let's break that down into two parts. One, do you think Curry is the answer at the center spot if he's healthy?
No, I don't. And I'm just going to be honest, and I'm not going to go off of all your tweets, okay? I'm coming from my own mind, and I'm going to say no. I mean, and then, you know, the part of me, the woman in me, wants to have a silver lining. And then the silver lining would be that, you know, he can, you know, plan, you know, pan out and work well, but I just think with, you know, if he's having problems now, you know what I mean? You haven't even, we ain't even played a game yet. I mean, outside of preseason and the red and black game and then whatever you do in practice, but gosh, you know what I mean?
No, I agree.
I just don't see it.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And I will say this. Everybody knows I've been hard on Eddie Curry. I've said it on, I think, 2 or 3 podcasts now straight, and, you know, I go on these rampages on Twitter about it. So this will be I will give a pro-Eddie Curry stance. Maybe not pro. I give a positive spin on it. And you know, following your line on your silver lining thing, following your lead.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Dwayne and LeBron were able to get a roster spot for one of their friends. I like that.
True.
You know,
true.
We talked about, you know, that's positive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I don't like about it is, well, like, I don't, you can't play. So, you know, I just want them to say, like, I appreciate Spoelstra's take on it, where it was like, hey, Spoelstra, all his quotes said, hey, we're just happy to have him out there. That's great.
Yeah.
I just don't want anybody selling to me that Eddie Curry is going to be the Heat's answer at the center spot, because that's not true, and they all know that's not true, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, if he was like a rookie, it'd be different, but he's not a rookie.
Right. I mean, well, I'm looking at the Bleacher Report on an article, and it says his best season came in 2006, where he averaged, what, 19.1 points, 7 rebounds, okay, but that. But what, we're like 5 years removed from that?
Exactly. Exactly. And the, you know, and so the last article I put up last night, it looks at his stats from his best season, and basically he's the anti-Joel Anthony. You know, he's the opposite, the bizarro Joel Anthony. You know, when he hits the offense, Joel Anthony hits the defense, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That in Curry's best season, he had great offensive numbers, but all his defensive numbers stunk. And
exactly.
So when you tally them all together, he turns out to be no more productive than Joel Anthony was last season. So
Right.
And
right.
It's the Heat.
Yeah.
And so I just don't see him bringing any additional value. I mean, so, but now that we think Eddie Curry is not the answer, what does the Heat need to do to get an answer?
Well, you know, I'm kind of, you know, a little perturbed at D'Alembert. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But, you know, when you look at, as they say, the big men are, you know, they are the need, so they're getting paid pretty handsomely for, you know, lack thereof, okay?
Right.
Like, you know, you take Kwame Brown for, you know, $7 million, and I'm sure Timmy Thomas is sitting there looking like, I want my $7 million too, you know? But whether I deserve it or not, but I always said that I think the Heat, if they're going to get a center, they at least need a center that can garner some type of, you know, a attention, okay? I'm not talking about, you know, an offensive threat, but somebody that they, you know, they have to pay attention to. I don't know if that person's out there right now. You know what I mean? I think D'Alembert could probably serve that purpose, but I don't, you know, from what I'm seeing out there on the news, is, you know, he might be looking at the Kings again. So, you know, I don't know.
Wow. So the news is pretty bad. Then it's all D'Alembert or nothing on the news.
To me, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, because when, you know, Ira put out there the best free agents, and, you know, out of the big man, I mean, he was it.
Right.
Slim Pickens out there. You know?
Yeah, I do think you brought up a good point about D'Alembert being able to occupy the other team's attention without being an offensive force, right? Like
mm-hmm.
without being a scorer like Eddie Curry, because mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of the same way as Tyson Chandler was for Dallas. Even if
yeah.
you don't have to guard him for, you know, because they're going to run plays for him, you have to keep a body on him because he's going to crash the offensive rebound.
Exactly.
So, you know, he's going to crash the glass. So that's how they command attention, because if you leave them, D'Alembert's on the glass for putbacks. If you stay with them, well, that's one less person that can, you know, help off
mm-hmm.
to harass Dwayne and LeBron and Bosh. So
exactly.
I do think that's important. Let me ask you this question about D'Alembert of Sacramento. What kind of money are they talking about him getting in Sacramento?
Well, I haven't actually seen a dollar figure, but, you know, with Landry failing his physical and his contract being voided, you know what I mean? They have a need now. And
was it Landry or Chuck Hayes?
Yeah, sorry, Chuck Hayes. Forgive me.
Okay.
Yes, Chuck Hayes. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, whatever they're going to give him is going to be more than what he can give him if they sign him outright. And then I was kind of reading things back and forth where if the Kings had released their rights to him, it would be almost impossible to do a sign and trade. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so right. Yes, I remember that. That's right. When they renounced
mm-hmm.
their rights, they couldn't sign mm-hmm. them and then trade them to the Heat for some Mike Miller, whoever they wanted.
Exactly.
Wow. So let me ask you this question. And, you know, I didn't even connect the fact that D'Alembert was looking back at Sacramento after Chuck Hayes failed the physical. I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah. Well,
Go ahead.
I think what he had his sights set on Houston, and you know, I guess Houston went, you know, in the opposite direction. So I guess now he only the only person he got to put the ball back on is the Kings. You know, I mean, because it's
right.
apparent that to me, you know, you are putting money before winning, because if you wanted to win, you would have signed with the Heat by now, right?
True.
You know, my thing is this. sign for the veterans minimum, do a year, you know what I mean? You know, do it, you know, if it works out, if they can, you know, sign you long term, because you don't know what the roster's going to be like next year. You know what I'm saying? You never know.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not him, I, you know, so. It is what it is, right?
Okay, right. Well, I did that. You bring me up to two questions then about that. So the first one is, what did Chuck Hayes get from the Kings in terms of salary?
You know what? I'm not for sure. I would have to actually look that up. I could probably do that
okay.
right now.
Okay. So then my second question is, or my second point was about Dallin Bear and, but actually, I'm going to add 3 points. The second was about Dallin Bear taking less money to
mm-hmm.
win. Now,
mm-hmm.
hey, I love the Dwayne LeBron and Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem, maybe not Mike Miller so much, but Udonis Haslem took less money to play for the Heat last season. Dwayne LeBron and Wade sacrificed, Dwayne Wade and LeBron and Chris's sacrifice wasn't the same kind of sacrifice people be asking family, but Dallin Bear to take. You know, it would be a much deeper cut. But
yeah.
I respect the fact that Dallin Bear, if any player needs to play for as much money as possible, it's Dallin Bear because of the work he does in Haiti. You know,
right.
You know, I don't know if you know any Haitians, but I just, whenever I go to, I live in New York City, but my company is located in New Jersey. And so whenever I go there, there's this Haitian cab driver who drops me off at the office. And so we talk about Haiti because, you know, I read Miranda Robinson, read his book about Haiti, and, you know, I try to follow it in the news. Just because of this cab driver, I love talking to him about it. And so he talks about how hard he works to send money back to take care of his family in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see when Dallin Bear had that Project Medishare thing that he does. So I can if anybody needs the money, it's Dallin Bear. He's not just using the money to buy, you know, Bugattis and stuff. He's actually using the money to rebuild and
afford.
Yeah,
you got a good point. Yeah, yeah. And I did not take that into consideration. So yes, that is a very good point.
Here's my but though. So while I give Dallin Bear credit. I give him a pass for playing for as much money as possible. I got to give Riley a pass for giving money to Shane Battier that he could potentially give to Dallin Bear because Dallin Bear is still out there. I don't understand what the rush was to sign Battier. Even if you're going to ask Dallin Bear to take less money, he didn't have to take his best minimum. They could have gave him the Battier money.
True. That is very true. That is very true. Because you know what? What, Shane got, what, $9 million, right?
For 3 years, right.
For 3 years, okay. So, you know, hey, right?
Right. And even if you don't give it to him. Right.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Here's what I don't understand. Even if you just give it to him for, that would be our ask. Yeah, right. So you're right. $9 million for 3 years. And then after the third year, the Heat would have Dallin Bear third, right? And then you can pay him whatever you wanted to.
Exactly.
So I would tell Dallin Bear, like, hey, come here, make the sacrifice for us. We'll give you as much as we can. So if that's the nine thing for 3 years, that's what it is. We'll give you as much as we can, and then we'll backload your next contract to take you into retirement, and we'll overpay you.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, you know, as you say, it's logic, right? That's logical.
Yeah.
Logical thing. Because, you know.
Yeah.
We
and
know.
Then, you know
that,
and, go ahead.
I was just saying, we know that the center's position has been a really sore spot. So, yeah.
Right.
I mean.
And I find it hard to believe. Like, he couldn't say, hey, look, you come here, whatever we can give you in salary because of the salary cap. We'll make up for it in donations to your Haiti trash, Haitian charity.
Yep, yep.
Why can't they do that?
Yes. I agree with that 100%. Okay. I really do. I think that's a, I think you should like maybe send a letter in or something like that. You know, I don't know.
Maybe I'll, Maybe I'll pass it along to the Heat.com intern, Danny Martinez. I used to do podcasts with him, so maybe I'll pass along him to drop the buzz and write on the
deal. Yeah, I think you should. But, you know, your question to me about Chuck Hayes, he had a four-year, $21.3 million deal.
4 years and 21. Okay. So you figure they give that to Dallin Bear, 4 years and 21. So that's a little over $5 million a year.
Yep.
I mean, it wouldn't be that big of a pay cut for Dallin Bear. You ask him to take in, you know, $2 million less a year, and then you tell him, you know, we can make that up for you in your fourth year with the Heat. But over, you know, we'll front load that contract so that for your fourth year, we'll do like the Thunder did with Nick Collison. When Nick Collison made, like, what, $9, $10 million last season because he front loaded his extension or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. Do that for
Dallin Bear. I'm a little bit baffled by it, you know, because I don't know what they thought, you know what I mean, that maybe he would just come because, you know, we're close. I don't know.
Right.
I think, I don't know, I'm a little uncomfortable, you know, with our roster right now, you know what I mean? In that area, I
saw your tweet after the during the preseason game. So
yeah,
when you were talking about the center spot. So yeah. I'm uncomfortable with it too. I'm fine with it for the regular season. It's just if you run, it's really the playoffs. That's where it was a problem last season. They steamrolled through every center in the East in the playoffs. You know, with Bosh in the middle. For most, you know, for the good portion of the game. And then when they ran into Dallas, which, you know, was the only team that had a legit, had a top five center, that's when they ran into problems. So one last thing I'll say about this then is to play devil's advocate is, you know, so the guy I do the Heat cast with on Fridays, Alfredo Arteaga, says that his sources tell him he knows some people that work for the Heat or have ties to the Heat. And they tell him that Dallin Bear wanted too much money, and the Heat, once Dallin Bear told the Heat how much money he wanted, the Heat knew they couldn't give it to him, so that's when they moved on with Battier. And then the other thing I'll say is that Dwayne Wade said in an interview, and I don't remember which interview it was, maybe you'll remember when I say what he said, but Dwayne Wade said that all the free agents this year are not taking any less money. They're all getting as much money as they can.
Yeah.
He said this early in the free agency process before that many deals were signed. He came out there like, look, nobody's taking less money this year after the lockout. Everybody's getting as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case with Dallin Bear, maybe it was never meant to be. But I just think that if, you know, everybody wants to get it, so it shows to me that my position is I really don't think Riley has the influence as general manager that people give him credit for. And where we're at today, 2011, Dwayne Wade is the general manager of the Miami Heat, and when Dwayne Wade said he couldn't convince anybody to take any less money, it is what it is.
Yeah, you're right, and I don't know if I think I probably posted that same exact comment on the blog on Sunset. No, I'm like, you know, I said, I think, you know, with the lockout and this new CBA, you know what I mean, I think it's turned people's thought processes a little bit more. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Whereas, you know, I mean, you know, the last CBA, it was loosely constructed, you know, and it was in the favor of the players. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, it's not. I mean, it is, but it really isn't. You know what I'm saying? While I can still play and bounce this ball, I'm going to make as much money as I can. You know what I mean? You know, for the younger players, middle rung players, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then, like, you get down to the veterans, like the Battier, stuff like that, you know, they've been in the league for a while. You know what I mean?
Right.
They got their money, right? Now, I want to play for something more. So, yeah, I'm willing to sign a contract for 3 years, $9 million, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, I don't know. Interesting.
No, you're right. I think you're right. You know, when you talk about the comments you posted on the Sun Sentinel blog, I think you're right. Because the first 2 years of the CBA are less restrictive than the next 4 years. So So yep. I guess, you know, that's you're right. That's another reason why players are going to have to get their money now, because they know in 2 years they're not going to be able to get what they can get now. So
exactly.
That's a good point. And then, you know, when you bring up, we were talking about Dallenberg getting money off the books, you know, the Heat making donations to his charity. And you're talking about how Battier took less money to come here because he's, you know, saw the bigger picture. You know, today the Heat had that press conference announcing their partnership with Tsing Tao Beer.
Yeah.
It's that Chinese beer, and Battier was there at the press conference as one of the players.
Yeah.
I found it interesting because Battier has a endorsement deal with the Chinese sneaker company, Peaks. And then he's at the press conference with the Chinese beer. I'm willing to bet Battier also got an endorsement deal with the beer company. I'm willing to put dollars to the donut.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, so I would be shocked if it wasn't part of the negotiation. They're talking to Battier, hey, you come here, you know we got the deal with the beer company, because that's the other thing. Battier came from Houston where Yao Ming was, but that's probably how he got the Chinese shoe company contract in the first place.
Yes, it is.
And when he came to the Heat, he's like, hey, you know, I got the Chinese money for Houston, so I'm already taking a pay cut. What can you guys do for me on my Chinese money?
Well, when I first saw it, I was like, what is this? You know what I mean? I didn't know anything about it. I was like, what? Who is this? Because I saw the logo. I saw a picture of Pat Riley, and I always look at the logos on the back, like, you know, when they're sitting there, you know, having a press conference. I don't know why.
I do too.
So I looked at the logo, I said, what is that? Last year it was Sharpie. You know, this,
right.
You know,
right.
This year, something I can't pronounce. So, that's interesting. Okay. All right.
It's very interesting indeed. All right, so that takes us into the third biggest news story back in the Heat going into the new season. That's Norris Cole. And you talked about the performance he gave in the red and black game that really sent Team Heat into convulsions on Twitter. Everybody was excited about him after the red and black game. But you said he seemed impressive and he seemed to be the type of player the Heat are attracted to, but will the Heat allow the rookie to grow? So what are the news, what are the columnists and the reporters and the bloggers saying about the Heat letting Norris Cole grow into his role as a future point guard?
Well, you know, from a few of the pages that I have read, they were basically, you know, giving the progress on his game, you know, and, you know, giving a breakdown, you know, about his positives and his negatives. You know, of course, I'm going to, you know, go to the positives. You know, he's fast. You know, he's, you know, he seems to, you know, have a high IQ. He has a pure point guard IQ, okay?
Okay.
Looking to set people up, you know, those kind of things. But the negatives, what they were saying, is that sometimes they think at this point in stage of his career with him, just, you know, just being, you know, coming out, that maybe he's going too fast, okay? Over dribbles. You know what I'm saying? Because, I watched the game, like, the man does not pick up the ball for nothing. You know, and you teach point guards that. Don't lose
right.
your dribble. Right? Okay.
Right.
So, you know, so there are some pros and cons. From what I've been reading is that, you know, he would be a spark off the bench. You know what I mean? And you got people coming out saying, you know, he's going to challenge Chalmers for his starting role. I don't think so. You know what I mean?
right.
But I know the Heat, and from the years that I've watched them, you got to be a pretty special rookie to, you know, start, right?
Right, like Chalmers did.
Y'all, like Wade, you know what I mean? You got to be special.
Right.
To start, and then you just hope that you don't start collecting dust on the end of the bench, you know what I mean? And I know that they have an affinity for veteran players. You know what I mean?
Right.
It is what it is. And so, hopefully, you know, I think if they do give him some in-game experience, you know, he will pan out for them. I just hope he doesn't collect dust on the end of the bench. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Okay.
So,
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think I always thought I saw some predictions online too. I saw them on Twitter that somebody said that they predicted that he'll have Chalmers' starting spot by the end of the season. And I don't see how you can make that proclamation off of a practice and a scrimmage. So I saw somebody tweet it before the scrimmage, and I was like, wow, really just going off some practices?
Exactly.
And then it was curious to me, like, once you got into the preseason game against Orlando, he didn't play as well.
No, that's the difference.
That's the difference with live bullets in the gun. You know, Chalmers went out and had a great game. 8 points, 5 assists, 3 boards, 2 steals, a block. You know, no turnovers in 23 minutes. Whereas, you know, Cole looked like a rookie. You know, 4 turnovers.
Yeah.
He did have 8 assists, which is fantastic. He only shot 2 for 6 from the floor.
Exactly.
There's still some work to do, but he's a better backup. Well, I like the poor guard rotation of Chalmers and Cole better than Bibby and Chalmers.
Yeah, I would have to say that. I almost think they're like the opposites, that, you know, they're opposites. They have strengths and weaknesses that can kind of complement each other. You know what I'm saying?
Interesting.
You know, yeah, you know, like, to me, I think Chalmers is okay in defense. You know what I'm saying? I mean, now, what I like about him is that he plays the passing lanes, you know, so he gets the steals and those kind of things, right? I don't think Chalmers is a good dribbler when he's being pressured. When he's being picked up in the backcourt, he has problems. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Where I think Cole is a better dribbler than Chalmers is.
Okay.
I think Cole's on-the-ball defense look pretty good. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, you know, they have, you know, those strengths and weaknesses offsets, which, you know, it can be good ongoing, you know, provided that he gets an opportunity. You know what I mean?
I agree. I think the good thing is that going into the season, Spo's almost going to be forced to play him just because there's no backup for Chalmers. And because there's no backup for Chalmers and Mike Miller's hurt. If Mike Miller was healthy going into the regular season, and I was like, I could see where Spo was just bringing Miller. When take Chalmers out, put Miller in, and fly Wade or LeBron over to the point. But with Mike Miller being hurt, I think it's going to give Cole some chance to play early, kind of like it gave Eddie House a chance to play early last season.
Yeah.
And Eddie House is hurting now, too.
Yeah, which is another unsettling position that I just don't feel comfortable with. But, you know, hey, whatever. You know, it is what it is, man. I have a few concerns, but other than that, you know.
Okay. Now, so you gave your concerns about Cole, and you gave your concerns about Chalmers. Is it the combination of those two that makes you unsettled about it, or is it something else about the point guard out on the roster that makes you uncertain?
You know, my thing is, okay, now, I think with our team it's unique because you got Wade. You got LeBron that can handle the point. You know what I mean? Do they like to do it? Probably not. You know what I mean? But I would like to see what happens when Wade and James come out of the game. You know what I mean?
Right.
Who's going to produce, who's going to, you know, keep the offense flowing? And I know Chalmers can do that. And I know Chalmers can score, especially when it gets hot. You know what I mean? But, you know, my concern is keeping the intensity, keeping the energy going, and keeping the offense fluid, scoring. You know, those kind of things is what concerns me. Because here's my thing. I just wish the Heat would get a bench, okay? Right?
Okay. Well, see, all right. So I'm going to say this. I put last year, about, I think, 3 or 4 times last season, I put articles on Bleacher Report about the Heat bench. And I never even thought about the bench because I tend to focus on the star players. I'm not really concerned with the scrubs. I don't think they have enough of an impact on the game to be concerned about. But I know diehards really care about the scrubs. So one of the diehards of Bleacher Report asked me to run some of the, I use this advanced metric called wins produced. It basically, you know, it takes all the stats in the box score and it knows how they correlate to wins, so it calculates how many wins each player produces. And so this one guy asked me, well, how does the Heat bench look in terms of wins produced? So I hadn't looked at it all season. He asked me this in December. So I hadn't looked at it so far. So I looked at it, I was like, wow. As of December, he had the second best bench in the league. In terms of production.
Really?
Because of Udonis Haslam and James Jones was shooting really well.
Okay.
So, and then Chalmers coming off the bench. Yeah. You know, Chalmers is an average point guard. So,
yeah.
That means there are 15 other point guards in the league that are worse than Chalmers. So, they had the second best in the league. And that was without Mike Miller. So I was like, wow. If Mike Miller comes back, they'll have the best bench in the league. Then, of course, UD ripped his foot up a week later.
Yeah.
And, it all went to hell in a handbasket. So they ended the season with an exactly average bench. Their bench ended the season ranked 15th in the league. But that was just Miller missing time. And then once Haslam went out, and even when Miller came back, it was, Miller carried it for a little bit. When he came back, and then his play kind of declined a little bit, and so they ended up 15th. But I think now, with Cole to back up Chalmers, it's a question whether or not Cole would be able to be as good as Chalmers is. So he probably won't be as rookie. So we'll say that they'll probably drop at that spot. But if UD is healthy, and if Miller's going to be gone until February, so they're going to struggle in the beginning, but I think by the end of the season, the bench will look as good. It probably won't be as good as the Bulls, but I think they'll have the second best bench in the league after the Bulls once they get Miller healthy.
Okay.
That's my prediction.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
So you'll feel better about the bench by the end of the season. You're like, oh, wow. You'll like
hope.
That second unit. Yeah.
Okay, you give me hope.
Right, and the one thing I'm looking forward to from the bench this season with Cole is an excellent pick-and-roll defender. And
yes.
So, the Heat already, they blitzed the hell out of pick-and-rolls with, UD and Bosch. So they're already dangerous at that point. Chalmers was never good at it. When they had Wade guard the pick-and-roll, they could also blitz it with Wade and the big man, which is really fantastic, which is what they did in Chicago, which is why Derrick Rose looked so bad. But if you put Cole in there, blitzing the pick and roll with UD, I think they're going to terrorize offenses.
I mean, I was really impressed. Yeah, I was really impressed with the young man's defense. You know what I mean? I was.
Yes. So I agree with you on that. All right. This is the one I've been looking forward to the most. Topic number two. D-Wade MVP. It's time. Regardless of playing with LeBron and Bosh, you expect Dwayne Wade to have a big season to claim his first MVP award. Tell me why.
Because to me, and this is, like I said, this is my opinion, but I think D-Wade is underrated, okay?
Okay.
Because, and the reason why I say that, I think D-Wade should also be on first team defense as well, okay? I don't know too many 6'4" shooting guards that can block 7-foot centers, shots like that. You know what I mean? I'm dead serious because, what one game last year he had, 5 blocks?
Yeah, the Memphis game. The Memphis game after he got custody of his kids.
Yeah. Almost 10 rebounds and 20-some points? You know what I mean? I just think it's time. He's won all the other, different awards. He's got the Finals MVP. He's got the All-Star MVP. I just think that it's time. I just wish that these sports writers, these coaches would recognize D-Wade for what he is. You know what I'm saying? He's a terror, okay?
I agree.
Period. He's a terror.
Now, I would say this. This is my question. You watch every Heat game like I watch every Heat game. Dwayne Wade does take some plays off on defense.
Yes, he does. Which is why I said he should be on first team. He should. But he don't.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because he does. I mean, he doesn't bring it on defense every night. No, he doesn't.
Right. He brings it when he wants to. It's just, and I think he probably brings it every night at some point of the game. He just doesn't bring it for a whole 40 minutes every night when he's in the game.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is because he's a smart player. He's not trying to kill himself. I think I, you know, when you watch Kobe play, you can tell Kobe's pacing himself. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Sometimes Kobe gets out of control and probably burns too much of his energy trying to prove a point in a game. I think that's what happened in that preseason game with the Clippers. But Dwayne Wade, he keeps that rhythm, and then you can tell him, like, okay, now it's time for me to kill it. And he'll go into his kill mode, then he'll pull it back. Okay, let LeBron have some fun. Let me go into my kill mode. You know, I mean, that's my excuse for why he doesn't go hard on defense all game, but.
I tell you what would secure D-Wade an MVP trophy. If someone goes every night and punches him in the face, it makes him bleed, okay? If someone would just, like, give him an elbow, punch him, make him bleed, he will.
The more band-aids and stitches he gets, the better his shot at getting MVP.
I think so. You know, and like I say, I say that because I think he's just an absolute awesome talent. You know what I mean? I just think that, you know, there are other good players out there, but to me, this is like the older he gets, the better he gets. You know what I mean? So, you know, and I just think it's time. I do.
So this is what I would say. I wrote this piece last season. A couple guys asked me on another podcast last season on who I thought should be MVP or who I thought was MVP. And they all assumed I was going to say LeBron. And I said, I don't know if I would pick LeBron as the MVP of the Heat. I think, you know, I can make the case that it's Dwayne Wade. You know, it was a real stats-heavy podcast. So you're like, how can you say that? All the numbers say LeBron. I was like, at the surface. But if you dig into the numbers, you know, like I said, I watch every Heat game, and I track the stats for every Heat game on my blog. Dwayne Wade had 39 statistically great games last season. LeBron only had 31. Yeah. And so when I say statistically great, I mean he was responsible for more than half of the wins. He was responsible for more than half of the production that he needed to win 39 times last season. He's a great player. I don't know if he can, you know, increase that this season to over 41, which means he's responsible for, you know, more than half of his production in half the games. That would be, I would think, phenomenal.
Yes.
But here's my question to you regarding D-Wade getting an MVP. You know, with LeBron coming out with his interview on ESPN, where he stated that, you know, he's got his mind right this season. And Dwayne Wade came out even before then on Coach K's radio show where he said he thought, you know, the Heat were too caught up in the hate and under LeBron needs to get back to enjoying the game. Mm-hmm. If LeBron has a bounce back, not a bounce back season, but if LeBron, you know, LeBron's stats declined a little bit last season and everybody assumed it was because he was playing with two stars. I think that's true for some of it, but I don't know about all of it. So if LeBron's numbers bounce back this season, and if he looks like he's having fun and people stop hating him, which I don't think they will, but if they do, and he go out and have a best record in the NBA and all this and all of that, do you think they'll give LeBron credit for that or will they give Wade credit for that? Because if they give the credit to Wade, then I could see Wade getting that momentum for MVP as long as his numbers back it up too. But what do you think?
You know, I think the media heads, and you know who I'm talking about, okay? I think they would credit Wade for LeBron's success. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Right? So, you know, your question, I mean, it's a very loaded question. You know what I mean? And
it's very loaded.
It's a very loaded question, and, you know, almost to a degree unfair, you know what I'm saying? Because if he goes out and actually performs very well, MVP caliber season, you know, then I think that he should get that on his own. You know what I'm saying? Because he did it. But you're always going to have crosses because they play together. So you can't say one name without saying the other. Right?
Right.
So, you know, I would say they should give it to him on his own, but I know they're not. Now, if Wade won it, okay, they're not going to mention LeBron James. They're not going to say that. They're going to say Dwayne Wade won it, right?
Oh, wow. I see what you're saying. No, you're right. That's true. I agree with that.
Yeah. They're not. So, that's what I said. I think sometimes media goes overboard. They're sensationalized. You know what I'm saying? And I would say with some of them, just shut up. You know, because, you know, it's ever apparent that you have personal bias versus factual information. You know what I'm saying?
Agreed.
So you let your personal feelings overtake what's actually factual and what's on paper.
Agreed.
So.
Okay. One last question about Dwayne Wade winning MVP. So we talked about how Dwayne Wade paces himself during a game, and he even does it during the season. He's pacing himself. Because, I mean, let's be honest, at this point, Dwayne Wade's saving himself in the playoffs. And, you know, we saw that in the finals where, you know, he looked fantastic in the finals until he got hurt.
Yeah.
So do you think Dwayne Wade will go hard enough to put up the numbers, to put up those MVP numbers in the regular season?
Probably not. And the reason why I say that is because, one, it's a shortened season. Okay.
Okay.
You got a lot of back-to-back-to-back-to-backs, right?
Well, he only got one, luckily. They only got one, but they played 3 games, 3 nights.
Okay. I still don't think so. I think they'll do enough to get a decent playoff seeding. You know what I'm saying? And they'll take it from there. That's just my opinion, you know, based off of from what I've seen. I mean, now he can come out and totally blow that out of the water. But, you know, I'm just thinking that most of these veteran teams, these contenders, they're going to do just enough to get seated. You know what I'm saying? To get seated, you know, between, like, what, your 1 through 4s? You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So, it'll be interesting, and you probably just, you know, blew my D-Wade rant for MVP out of the water, but that's okay.
No, hey, I wanted it to happen. I didn't want it to become a Dwayne Wade MVP love fest, you know, so I had to play the devil's advocate as much as it hurt.
Yeah. That's all right.
I would love to see. Yes, objective, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see him go hard for a whole regular season to win MVP, because then that means to me that he, you know, if he goes hard for the entire regular season, they probably win 60 games in a 66-game season.
There you go.
I would love to see that.
I'll take what Mike Wallace said. 56 and 16.
50 and
16,
right.
Yeah. I think, you know?
Yeah, I think that's too many. That's too many losses for me. I'm on no more than 12 losses. But we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We got a few minutes left for the number one story facing the Heat going into this 2012 NBA season. According to you, it's chance or bust. Well, LeBron's new attitude in postgame, Boston's new focus, and last year's humbling of the team be enough for the Heat to win the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, the optimist in me, as you like to say, death to optimism, okay? The optimist in me says that I think it would be enough. You know what I mean? I am interested in seeing what Mr. James does this year. Not so much regular season, but postseason. You know what I'm saying? It is fair to say that people are going to judge him off of what he does in the postseason. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everybody knows that, you know, he's a great regular season player. He did very well through the first, three series. And then I think after game two, when they collapsed, he went right with them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, and if he's really dedicated to sharpening his game, I mean, with the post moves, you know, that adds a whole other dynamic to what they are, and if he's serious about that. Because, you know, I think, you know, the better he is, the better they are. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
So, you know, that's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, with Bosch, I think Bosch can back up what he says. You know what I mean? He's done it. But what Bosch is, he can't do it and then go back to doing what he was doing. You know what I'm saying? You, if you say that, then this needs to be you all the way through. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree with that.
So, you know, and really, to be honest, I mean, everybody says Dallas was a better team. I don't think so. And not because I like the Heat. You know what I mean?
Right.
If LeBron at least played to, as Lebertar has said before, to at least his average, they would have won.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because they had no answer for them. They didn't.
All right. I take it even a step further. LeBron didn't even have to play to his averages. If Wade had just stayed healthy for the last two games, they would have won.
True. Yeah, that too. Well, you got Mr. Custodian to thank for that, you know.
That's right. That's the one NBA player. You know, I don't like to sell those tickets. That's one NBA player. If I see his ass in these streets, it's going to be a problem.
You going down?
It's going to be a problem.
Down. Yeah.
And I ain't fighting the fair one with him either.
You're right about that. You're right about that. So, you know, I mean, I just think that, you know, I think it's their time. I think they need to embrace the moment, seize the moment, put away all what the media is saying. You know what I'm saying? Because you're not playing for them. You're playing for you and your team. And I just think that they need to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Because, honestly, you know, if we thought last year's media coverage was bad, this year ain't going to be better. You know?
Hey, you're right. You're right. Well, let me ask you two questions about that then to wrap this up. I want to start with LeBron's attitude, and then we'll end with, I'm going to end with Bosch. This LeBron's attitude thing has been intriguing me a lot since Dwayne Wade made his comments to Coach K, and then LeBron had his own interview with Richard Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, again, I think they lost the finals because Dwayne Wade got hurt. But LeBron and Wade seem to believe they lost because they were feeding into the hate and playing despite everybody. So let's say that they're right. That's why they lost. I don't understand how they change. Well, how do you think they can change that? Because did you get a chance actually to go to a Heat game last year?
No, I did not. I mean, I wasn't going to go down to Cleveland, you know.
Yeah, how far is from where you live?
How about almost 2.5-3 hours.
Wow, okay. Because you're in Columbus, right?
Yep.
I had an aunt. She lived in Worthington for a while.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. We used to go out there and visit her in the summertime. I went to a playoff game and I went to a regular season game against the Nets. And, you know, the Nets stink. Even though it was the first week of the season when they played them, the Nets were already sorry. But they booed LeBron every time he touched the ball at a Nets game for 40, he didn't play 48 minutes, so they blew him out by like 25.
Right.
But for, you know, the 30 minutes he played, every time he touched the ball, he got booed.
Yeah.
And so, I don't understand, when you're faced with that, for, you know, 41 times in the season, I guess this season will be 33,
mm-hmm.
I don't understand how you just ignore that and not react to it.
Right. I mean, to me, it would be almost impossible to do that. Because you're in that element. It's not like you're silo. You're not. You're there. And
right.
It does affect you. But I think you can play angry. It's just, you have to know how to play angry. I think the best player that knows how to play angry is Dwayne Wade. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everybody
Which is what Wade said.
It. Right.
Yeah. But so here's the thing, though. So I agree with you. But Wade said he can play angry, but he says LeBron can't. And LeBron said he can't. But how does LeBron stop playing angry? Or do you think they just need to teach him how to play angry?
Well, this is new to him, okay, because he was loved for what? All 7 years that he was, you know what I'm saying? Everybody loves LeBron.
Right.
So now I made a decision. I made a bad PR move, you know what I'm saying? And now everybody hates me. I don't know if you can take, to me, either you want to make the choice to do it or not. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I don't think there's something that, either you have it in you or you don't. I mean, because even if I was left for 7 years, I'm sure at some point in time in a game or a few games, somebody pissed you off and you got mad, right?
Right.
And, you know, you play mad. Because you're mad at something. Refs, somebody, opposite team, you know what I'm saying, teammate, somewhere. So, to me, either you have or you don't. And, unfortunately, you make this decision, and everything that came along with it, you know, I think it's a time to, and I say, grow up and do what you gotta do. That's just me.
Okay.
It is. I mean,
I agree with you. When I do when I write up my NBA preview, my theme song is going to be "Survival of the Fittest." So I think that fits in exactly what you're saying. So
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's time. Come on.
Okay. Well, the one thing I would say is that even if he can't this year, I'm still them relying on Wade to be his superstar self in the finals.
Yeah.
One thing that gives me hope that they can do that this year without Wade getting hurt is, did you read about Wade's off-season training at that turf athletic facility?
Yes, I did.
This is what jumped out to me at that article, is that the trainer said he was working on Wade's agility, and because he was tired of seeing Wade fall, crash into the floor without landing on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
The play that injured Wade in the finals is when he crashed into Brian Cardinal. And Brian Cardinal hit check.
Right.
What if the trainers, if this new agility training he did in the offseason will enable him to avoid that hit this season?
And a lot of folks going to be in trouble. I know Mark Jackson is a coach now, but let me go ahead and take on his mantra. Mama, there goes that man, okay? Because, the only way that they could slow him down was he got hip checked. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then
right.
When he came back, he was still lightweight, killing him. You know what I mean? So, healthy. Somebody in trouble. Period.
That's the second biggest key for the season. I think you're right. Number one is LeBron's attitude. Hopefully he can get that straightened out. But if he can't, plan B, we're going to rely upon Dwayne Wade's new agility.
That's right. Look, I'm going to ride that one until the wheels fall off, okay? That's my favorite part.
That's right. That is right.
Yeah.
All right. So I said for the last one we ended with was Bosch. So I think the point you made or the question you asked about Bosch's focus kind of ties together a lot of this stuff that we've been talking about. And it actually goes all the way back to Spo. So, when you hear Riley talk about Spo, he talks about Spo connecting with his players more.
Mm-hmm.
And so, LeBron said ESPN that he and Spo's relationship is stronger than ever and it's getting better all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you never hear any commentary about Spo's relationship with Bosch. And so I'm assuming that when Riley talks about it, that's one of, if not the primary relationship he's talking about that needs to improve.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think, was Spo's off-season coaching visit, will that help him improve his relationship with Bosch to help Bosch maintain that focus he needs? Or do you think Bosch needs Spo to help maintain that focus? What do you think of that?
I think Chris Bosh is one of those, he probably, when he shoots the ball, he sees the trajectory, the 90-degree angle, that kind of thing. So,
right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think he necessarily needs that. I just think Moss needs to be, he needs to be reinforced about what he means to this team. Because I think Chris Bosh is a critical piece to this team. You know what I mean?
So do I.
And I think Chris Bosh's success this year is going to say a whole lot about how far Miami Heat goes. So, to me, I think Spoh should, A, define what he's going to be, you know, define his role. You know what I'm saying? And stick to
okay.
it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And don't let anybody deviate from that. You know?
Okay.
This is, you know, so if we're going to go inside out, let's do that. Okay? If he's going to be the first scoring option down in the post, then we're going to do that. I just think, because every time you hear Chris Bosh say, he didn't understand his role. Right?
You're right. You're right.
You know, so I think they need to instill into him what his role is and how important he is to this team. Because, I mean, yeah, we got Dwayne Wade, but we need Chris Bosh.
Okay.
So,
wow. To me, I agree with that.
Yeah. So, yeah. I
agree.
Think that is, huh?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I just think that's imperative because I think if, you know, Bosh is settled, okay, and he has a comfort level with what he is supposed to do, I think, you know, we'll see a different Chris Bosh this year.
I think that's an excellent point. And I think that for several reasons. One, I agree with you that Bosh is a critical piece. And the people that don't watch the Heat day in and day out, what they don't realize in terms of how critical Bosh is. When Heat fans tell, you know, outsiders how critical Bosh is, they laugh. Like, oh, Bosh is not a critical part of the Heat. He's the third wheel, yada, yada, yada. No, that's not true. They don't realize that the offense and the defense runs through Bosh.
That's right.
People don't think that's true because of the way LeBron, but, you know, Bosh touches the ball every play on offense,
mm-hmm.
and he's because the Heat's offense hooks centers around pick and roll. And on defense, it's the same thing because most of the opposing teams often center around pick and roll, and Bosh is the one that has to defend the roll man. I mean, the guy
yeah.
setting the pick. So
right.
he's very critical to what the Heat do. And I think you're right that they need to stick to his role because I think when Chris Bosh knows what to expect,
mm-hmm.
he prepares for it well, and he can execute
mm-hmm.
that game plan, you know, the majority of the time.
Because
I know when Dwayne Wade, he said in an interview this preseason that he thought Bosh was the most consistent star that the Heat had during the playoffs. And
mm-hmm.
my first thought was that I thought Wade was out of his mind. Or I thought he was just trying to, you know, bump up Chris Bosh. And then I
yeah.
went back and looked at the numbers, and Bosh was the only one that improved every playoff series until the finals. His numbers got better and better as the playoffs went along, and I attribute that to him being more and more comfortable in his role.
Yeah.
And then in the finals, for the first four games, he was awful.
Yes,
he was just awful. And then
yeah.
in the last two games, he bounced right back to where he was in the Chicago series. So
exactly.
that was a sign to me that, okay, he ran into Tyson Chandler, caused him a lot of problems. And then he
mm-hmm.
figured out Tyson Chandler and asserted himself back to his normal role. So
yeah.
I agree with
and
you.
And then
if,
they went
if
away
they
from
me. Keep... well, yes, that too. Yes.
okay.
I think part of that going away was by design, though, because they knew Wade had such a mismatch. But you're right.
Okay.
It goes, like you said, if that's the game, if the role is for Bosh to be the number one post scorer, then stick to it. Which is why I don't understand this whole thing about him shooting threes. Do you understand that?
I don't like that, and I don't think he should do it. I mean, I don't. I mean, you don't need to be Dirk. Just be you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And granted, he did hit that three in the Wizards game, and they won it, but... You know,
hey, they needed that. right.
<Yeah.
laughs> but then, you know,
no.
he missed that one in the Hornets game. And so.
Yes, he did. Yeah, no, I don't particularly care to see him shoot threes. Ever.
All right. Well, the one thing we do care for is we can't see him dominate on Christmas Day. So hopefully that
yes.
is what he will do. And hopefully
yes.
we'll be in the paint. And hopefully we can have you back on for another Heat cast
to break down more Heat news for us.
Definitely. I would love to do that.
Okay.